You are listening to Dottotech. Hello and welcome to Dottotech. I'm Steve Dotto. Glad you could join us this week. Dottotech is dedicated to helping you get the most out of your technology wherever it fits in your life. And this is show 53, I guess starting our second year of the new show. Once again, this week we will be podcast only, returning to radio sometime in April as we're working on all of the details there. But we do have a great show lined up today. We're going to be talking with Catherine Demopoulos. She is the head of marketing and brand experience at Scene. Scene are the rewards people around the movie theater experience. And they have a new app that we're going to be chatting about that makes movie going that much more fun and some benefits for the theater goer. Our game guru, Jay Cormier, is going to be joining us, talking about what's happening in the world of gaming. And he's going to be talking to us about these new iPad and iPhone and handheld games. They're called asynchronous gaming. And if you have kids, if you just have time on your hand, you've been playing these games. They're just exploding in popularity. So Jay is going to be talking to us about that. In order to have time to play games, you need to be organized. Well, Rick Yeager, our Mac guy, is going to be helping us with some organizational apps. Theo Horstall is going to be talking to us about another organizational tool, really, about the Neat Scanner. So we've got lots of organization, a little bit of fun, and a little bit of movie going today on the show. Taking a look at this week's news, a couple of things have struck me as really interesting, and maybe the most, and because I was a big fan of the whole Harry Potter series, my kids enjoyed it, I thoroughly enjoyed it, I read the series to my youngest daughter, I was always surprised that the Potter books were not available in ebook format. They were never available to download and to put onto your ebook reader. Well, J.K. Rowling's website called Pottermore has just started selling digital editions of the Harry Potter books, and it shows you what clout is, because instead of having her ebooks, the Potter series, sent to Chapters and Barnes & Noble and all of the big book retailers, all ebook sales have to go through J.K. Rowling's site. And in fact, most of those big major book publishers or booksellers have links on their site back to the J.K. Rowling site. And they're going to get a little commission. They're going to get a little piece of the action instead of the whole sale, which was in the past. The books are quite reasonably priced. They've got a fairly liberal download policy. I think the books in Canada are around $8 to about $55 for the full set. And you can download them eight times each. They've got a few unusual things in their terms and conditions. You're allowed to share it with your kids as long as they're under 19 years of age, and when they're older they should buy their own. But it's kind of an honor policy, I think. Of course, anybody buying the Harry Potter books would of course be very honorable. So they've done a few things, but the compelling part of the story is Rowling has resisted ebook editions up till now until she was in control. And she is going to get the lion's share of the revenue. That's a fascinating story from the world of the ebook publishing. And we'll probably get Mike Kozlowski on the show next week and have a chat about this. Joining me online now from the center of the universe in Toronto, Ontario, is Catherine Demopoulos. Catherine is the head of marketing and brand experience for Scene. They are, of course, the rewards people for encouraging us to go out and see lots of movies in the theater. Thanks for joining us today, Catherine.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, I have long used an app on my mobility devices, the Cineplex app. And this is, mm-hmm. You folks have now upgraded it and made it much more user-friendly and added a whole bunch of extra features. So let's talk about that.
Okay. Well, the Cineplex Scene mobile app offers Scene members the opportunity to check their points balances. Of course, find theater show times, buy their tickets on the go, and the great thing is there's no additional service fees to do that. And then they can even join Scene through the app and be a member, or even go to our mobile site, which is m.scene.ca. It's been an overwhelming success. Our members love their phones, and the dependency on mobile phones today is increasing by leaps and bounds. We already have close to 320,000 Scene members already having their cards uploaded to the app. So what it allows it to do also is get rid of that card in your wallet and just use your phone.
That's a big thing. I mean, when you're purchasing, when you're at the movie theater and they say, do you have your scene card? So often with
you
so many cards, you go, oh, do I have it? But the barcode is right there on the app, so they
Absolutely.
Can just scan that in directly. But also, in a lot of cases now, you can just purchase the tickets directly from the phone. Now, is
Absolutely.
That a paperless ticket then? I just walk in and I just show them that
yes.
I can just scan it in. That's an even better solution.
Absolutely. We stay very connected to our scene members, and over the year, last year, we talked to them a lot about what they'd like to see improve in the program and what functionality do they want, and mobile was a big, big ask of them, and the more that they can do more on their mobile phone, the more empowered they are to be able to make those decisions on the fly. So we aim to please, and we delivered, and not only are we increasing our cardless members by using the mobile phone, but we're getting a lot of Canadians signing up to the program through their mobile phone through m.scene.ca.
Well, it makes it really convenient if you can just go
straight. You're in the theater, you're hearing, or you see somebody with a scene card, whether it be on their phone or a physical one, you inquire about it, and then you can do it with, by the time you get into your movie, you're already signed up as a member and can enjoy 10% off at you know, movie snacks and start to earn points for future movie purchases.
So the movie snacks, so the popcorn, I get 10% off as well. That's
10%
that's
as well as their special combo deals for scene members where they can earn and use points towards. We're also increasing a variety of different experiences that can gain additional points to our members. Scene Trivia Stars was just recently launched on Facebook. We have a really passionate Facebook fan base. And one of the things that they love to do, aside from going to movies, is socialize with one another, talk about movies, and, you know, exchange their views on what's happening in the entertainment world. And we thought, what better way than to develop a very simple and fun movie trivia game that provides that engagement level interaction between movie visits. So we just recently launched Trivia Stars, and it's a game, like I said, very simple. You answer a series of 10 trivia questions across a variety of movie genre, and our members win bragging rights amongst their friends and family, as well as the opportunity to earn additional scene points. But what we also decided to do was open it up to not just scene members, because there's a lot of movie enthusiasts out there that are not yet members, and we wanted them to get a taste of what our members added experiences are. Of course, unless you're a member, you don't get the scene points, but you do get game points, so you still can get in the action and share your movie trivia knowledge.
Now, I'll tell you where this has come in handy for me, as I do a fair bit of traveling for speaking engagements, and if I'm in Saskatoon and staying at a hotel, I don't know what theaters are nearby.
Okay.
And, you know, the ones that are kind of walking. And your service in the mobility side is fairly geo-aware, so it knows basically where I am. Am I correct?
Absolutely.
So finding a movie to go to that's kind of within walking distance of the hotel, when you're looking, you know, just even online, you don't necessarily know where all of those theaters are. But with the app, you can quickly find a theater close by. And I've used that a few times myself in Founder
Peak. That's great.
Yeah, it's, you know, it gives you something to do in an evening when you'd just be sitting around, you know, in the hotel room watching TV or do an email.
And for scene members, they'll always know what their points balances are, so they'll know if they'll be able to see that movie for free.
Oh, and is that the main thing? I haven't used any of my points yet. I don't know how many points I have, because I don't think the original app didn't
check that.
Well, the original app didn't tell me my point balance automatically, did it?
No, you have that availability.
Oh, this could
and
be exciting.
Like I said, you can check your points balances, and then when you go into the theater, you can redeem for a free movie and or movie snacks. The list is getting longer and longer.
Well, if I've got lots of points, I might just go down to the theater and have dinner, you know, popcorn and some nacho chips, and that'd be a good dinner.
Excellent. Yeah. Very healthy.
Of course, it is all free, and looks like you have every flavor, iPhone, BlackBerry, Android, and iPad, so you're covering the entire gamut.
Absolutely.
And do you have a sense of engagement? Can you throw, like, how many people are, you know, as far as, is it more popular in one platform out of the iPhone users seeming to jump on board faster than another? Do you have those stats?
You know, I think traditionally iPhone users
are
the first testers of everything. So
yes.
They're obviously the most engaged in terms of anything to do with mobile. But all the other types of smartphones right behind them, and I think it's just becoming a natural, relevant source of communication and action and engagement with brands. As we go forward, the expectation from Canadians on what they can do with their mobile phone is going to increase, and we're responsible to ensure that we provide them sort of relevant ways to continue to engage with our programs and meet the benefits that they're getting out of the Scene points rewards.
And you also have trailers. I think more relevant to the iPad than anything else, but there are trailers available through the app as well, right? Good, good. So last of all, where do people go for information? Obviously, the Apple App Store if you're on iPhone or the iPad. What about other users?
You can go to scene.ca. You can go to m.scene.ca. And you can also go to cineplex.com for the actual app download itself.
Catherine Demopoulos is the head of the marketing and brand experience at Scene. We thank her very much for her time, and I'm sure you want to say go see a movie to everybody.
Definitely, but for you specifically, go check your points balance.
I'm going to do that.
You may be able to treat some of your friends and family to some free movies.
No, it's for Steve. I earned those points there for me. Joining me now, my official game guy, Jay Cormier. Jay, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Now, is this going to be your last official game guy thing, bearing in mind what happens tomorrow?
He's sneaking a peek at a certain someone turning a certain 40 years old. No, I think a 40-year-old can still play games.
Oh, okay. Well, you and I don't disagree, but you're courageous to say so. That's all I'm saying. If you also go he on radio, you know that you're probably cool with playing games at 40. But on behalf of all of us, happy birthday!
Thanks.
Okay, so let's get past those niceties and let's talk about what's happening in the game world. And you have to fill me in on this drawing game that my daughter has been playing with all of her cousins and friends and all of this sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's a game called Draw Something.
Yeah.
Now, this is a new wave of types of games, and the game type is called asynchronous games. Asynchronous, the word there just means not at the same time. And so basically what that means is I do something in my own merry own time, and then I'm done, and I've partnered up with somebody, and then it's their turn. And they could reply and play their round in the next 2 minutes or the next 3 days or weeks. And what most people do is they are playing 8, 7, 12, 14 games at once with various people. And at any time, they just turn on their iPod, iPad, whatever kind of phone they have. And there's 3, 4, 5 people that are ready to play the next round.
And now, I guess we've had asynchronous games for a while, but it would be like Scrabble and it would take forever to play a game. These games are like one round and it's done. Am I right?
Well, funny enough, one of the first asynchronous games that became very popular was called Words with Friends. And this is from a company called Zynga. And this is basically Scrabble. It really is. You play on a board that looks very much like Scrabble. You got tiles that look very much like Scrabble. Mm-hmm. And it's just the layout's a bit different. And you play a turn, and then eventually somebody else plays a turn. And it really is like Scrabble. Then they had a game called Scramble with Friends. And another one that was Hanging with Friends, which was kind of like Hangman with Friends. And these are all from Zynga. And then recently, Draw Something came out from OMG Pop. And it just took the nation by storm, so much so that in its first month, it had 37 million downloads.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous. 37 million. And so are you playing this or any of the other games?
At this very moment, I'm playing.
While we're talking.
That's rude, my friend. Absolutely. Now, Draw Something is very much like the old Pictionary. So you draw, you're given some topics of things to draw, and you draw it, and then your friends that you're playing with have to guess what you're drawing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's actually, this one's interesting because it's more of an activity, and it's interesting that people really glammed onto it because you get coins, points, if you will, but you both get them. And you're only playing with two people. So it's really interesting that it's not really a game. It's more of an activity.
It's not really, it's not competitive. You're not trying to beat each other, per se.
And that could be a reason why it's actually so popular.
Yeah, because it's like a cooperative game, but you're just kind of enjoying it. And they, now, in the Draw Something, you don't get to choose what you get to draw. It's like playing a board game where it says it gives you an easy, medium, and a hard level. game to draw.
Yep. And you have these little things called bombs, and you can explode them if you want to get a whole new set of words, but you only have limited number of bombs per game that you play. Mm-hmm. And of course, you can buy new bombs, and you can buy more colors so that you have more variety and stuff like that.
Oh, that's where, because I was wondering where the economic model comes in. And so there's advertising, I guess, embedded as one model.
Well, there could be. If there's a free version that anybody can just download right now, and it's free, and mm-hmm. then there's a 99-cent version, and 37 million downloads, they don't differentiate between which ones were purchased and which ones were free. But after 1 month of being in existence, Zynga purchased this app, Draw Something, for $120 million.
Zynga of the Farmville fame and those sorts of things, right?
They're the biggest makers of apps and whatnot, yeah.
Yeah, of the small games. They're one of the most irritating companies on the face of the earth because they're Facebook games. I guess their Facebook games are where they... And they had a big public IPO, which is where I guess they got the money. So these guys are making money there. Now, one thing I was going to comment on is how topical the drawing elements are. My daughter, and I don't know whether it's pulling information from her Facebook account or other things, but it seems to me that it's looking at some of your other social media to determine what it is that you might like to draw. And I say this because my daughter who is 13, has been going crazy over this whole Hunger Games thing.
Right.
And she goes, and she's, as she's sitting there playing with my niece, she's chortling away and she goes, "Oh, look, Dad, I get to do PETA, who is, I understand, a character in Hunger Games." And so I think that they're scraping some information. So if your privacy radar is going off, it probably should, because Zynga isn't well known for respecting one's privacy too much. Have you paid much attention to that side of the story?
I would hazard a guess that it isn't, because I also had PETA and Katniss come up, and I don't care one lick for that franchise.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So I would.
So you're mature in that aspect.
Yes, I haven't seen any Indiana Jones references come up yet.
Oh, which would work for you? Okay.
Yes.
So perhaps I'm overreacting to it. At any rate,
I think they're just taking what's popular and putting a lot of popular, because there's even like Brad Pitt will be something all of a sudden you have to draw. You know, so there'll be popular names and people and whatnot that are in there.
Yeah. Why not? What do they measure it so that you don't just write the word?
No, that's another thing. I played with some people, and they just write, maybe not the word, because that's obviously ridiculously cheating. They'll write other words around it that are describing it, and I'd stop playing with those people.
Like a guy with a beard going, ho, ho, ho.
Totally. Exactly. Exactly.
And you stop playing with those people? I'd be playing with those people more often.
Well, then it becomes, because since it's only an activity and there's no actual game, I can't win. Mm-hmm. It's just a game. Then it becomes less fun of activity. It's like, yeah, okay, I get it, Santa. Okay, well, it's too easy.
And... are you a good drawer?
I'm okay. I mean, you're drawing on an iPod or an iPad, so you're using your finger. You know, it's pretty goofy, you know, which is good. And that makes it, I think that makes it, people give a little bit more leeway in the quality of the drawings.
Okay. And I imagine, as you know, the thing is to come up with creative ways to draw things. And if you get dog, not to just to do a dog, but to do something creative.
Yeah. And now that Zynga's purchased it, they have made an announcement that they do plan to gamify it a little bit more and make it more of a game. They haven't announced how they're going to do that, but they're going to definitely find ways to have more in-game purchases, because that's where they're going to be making a buttload of money.
And I can imagine now that Zynga's purchased it that we will start getting invitations to play on a lot more regular basis, as opposed to just going there and finding it for ourselves, because they are the king of irritatingly getting into our lives.
Absolutely.
I was editorializing there.
My friend needs a coin in a certain game. Can you help him?
Yes. I don't care about your farm. It's a virtual farm. What's wrong with this story? Go out and grow something for real. Okay. Enough of that. Okay. So, but now, are the games that are of these asynchronous games are more classic board type games, and I might enjoy them a little bit more.
Yeah, like
I guess you could play chess that way too.
Yes, you could. Yeah, I think it's when it gets to the creative aspect. I think that's what people are like, the Scrabble and stuff, because you're creative and trying to come up with words and drawing and stuff like that.
And it works, and it's also, so you know, the fact that it's taking advantage of the interactive touchscreen and those sorts of things. Those are some nice features. So we'll definitely keep our eye on those as we go along. Okay, what's next? We've got asynchronous games. Oh, the in-game purchasing. Talk to me about, because that really kind of leverages into what we're talking about now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, more and more publishers are making video games that in which their primary source of income is now moving more and more towards purchasing little things in the game. And these things could be something aesthetic, like a jersey or a shirt or clothing or furniture for a character's house or whatnot. Or they could be things that actually improve the gameplay, like you get a weapons pack or you get new levels. But it's these kind of downloadable contents that help elongate the play, like actually give you sustainability, and so you can play the game for longer. And that's really important for game publishers, because they can then make sure you hang on to the game, because publishers lose money off of used game sales. They don't lose money. They don't make money off of used game sales. So This is a way for them to tell you to keep the game so that you can keep getting these extra benefits as they dole them out over the next 6 months, 12 months, even longer for some popular games.
And now are people, is it primarily shortcuts or is it additions?
Well, it could be anything. Like, for example, in the FIFA game that just came out from EA, they have in there a sub-game where you collect these cards of players. And you can play with these cards you got that are randomly given to you. You can then form a team and then play a real game of soccer with potentially other people out in the online world. And then you can trade these cards amongst it. And when you're trading a card, you're literally trading a player. And you can earn more coins that'll help you by playing the game, that'll help you buy more cards. Or you can go in and actually purchase specific cards. And this is where they're making a lot of money. They're making literally off this tens of millions of dollars off just this card game in the FIFA game.
Now, and that's an Electronic Arts product, is it?
Yep.
Because I know that there was a lot of conversation about EA struggling with, especially with their console game sales and things like that. So is this a way that they're kind of recapturing the marketplace and recapturing their profit margin, which has been steadily eroded because of all of the, you know, because of the fact that we're not spending $69 on a new version of a game, but we're getting these 99-cent asynchronous games.
It can be a win-win scenario if the publisher is creating purchasable, downloadable content that is interesting and things that we want. Then we're happy to do it. We want to buy these things. We want to make our game better. We want to play Mass Effect 3 that just came out, and we want you can earn coins to get these new weapon packs in your multiplayer games. Or you can go in and just purchase it right away, and so in your next game you have these new weapons. And people are doing that because they want to speed up their gameplay.
Is that almost a kind of a general guideline? Is that you shouldn't have to pay more money, but you should be able to improve just by performance and just eventually build up the credit by gameplay as opposed to laying out cash?
That's where it becomes a fine line. If a publisher goes too far and the base game isn't satisfying enough and you need to buy things to make the game enjoyable, that's where they've crossed the line. And so publishers are aware of this. And
there'll be a pretty big backlash, I imagine.
There will be, yeah. Absolutely.
But they would hear that very quickly from the community, and I suppose that gives them a lot of opportunity to respond at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
I would not be quick to whip out my credit card or my PayPal account because, you know, I would complain first.
Yeah. another thing they're trying to do to reduce the used game sales and make money off it is when you buy the game originally, you get something called like an online pass. This one's actually, again, from EA. And if you have to log in a code and you can play online, and if you buy it used, you don't have this online pass because the code's used up. Mm-hmm. So you can get the online pass, but it costs you $10.
Okay. Well, that seems reasonable.
Yeah. So but you have to know that as a purchaser of used games, that if you're buying this EA game that's used, that you need to know that to play online, you also will have to pay another $10.
It's going
to
be another $10. Yeah. And that sort of information is probably pretty readily available on their website.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's now get to the what's happening in the handheld space, because the PlayStation Vita is on its way.
Just launched a couple weeks ago, so it's it had a pretty decent, like a spectacular launch, really above expectations, really.
I would have thought that those handheld game systems would be under siege from the Android and iPhone market, in iPod Touch marketplace.
Big time they are. They are big time under siege. And that's definitely a concern for both Nintendo and Sony PlayStation. I think the thing that Sony PlayStation and Nintendo have are the licenses or the characters and the games that they IPs that they have. Because the only way to play Uncharted, the Abyss game that they have, is on the Vita. That's the only way to play. And that was by far their number one launch title for the PS Vita.
Okay. And what's that game?
The Uncharted, you know that, did you hear Uncharted 1, 2, and 3 came out on PlayStation 3, and it's very much like an Indiana Jones modern day kind of action-adventure game, and then so they created a new one just for the PS Vita.
Now, as a game guy, And you're now 40. You're just about 40.
Hey, come on. I'm in my 30s, man.
So your eyesight hasn't started to go yet, but it's close.
Yeah.
Have you noticed a change in the old vision yet?
I think I'm still in the denial stage of that.
Okay, well, okay, you can continue to deny it. But here's the question about these small handheld devices. Are they only for the young? Because I find now, even looking at an iPhone screen, that I like my iPad a lot better just because the screen's bigger. And I have to work hard to read and to see things happening on the small screen. That's because I'm so much older than you. I'm a decade older than you. But the fact is that our eyesight does slowly start to deteriorate. And these screens are small. Despite the fact that they're nice, bright screens, they have great resolution, they are small. Is there like a best before date, you think, for age of using these things?
That might play into it for sure, but I think it's also the types of games that they'll have on these consoles. So I don't know if Uncharted is going to appeal to the 50 plus crowd or not, because it's very finicky in its controls. Like, you have to know how to play a video game to play it. But you take something like Nintendogs or something like that, you know, where it's dogs, or you take a Brain Age, where it's all these little brain things that help train your brain and make you smarter.
Oh, they're like quizzes and things that keep your brain active, which apparently keeps us young.
Exactly. Those kind of games on the Nintendo system were selling like hotcakes and are some of the hugest, biggest sellers for Nintendo. So I think it's more that you maybe just change game style as you get older, maybe.
Okay. So, and now Nintendo is the big competitor for the Vita.
Yeah.
Is one still ahead of the other?
Well, I mean, it's too early to tell now. PS Vita is outpacing the Nintendo. It was the new one from Nintendo. It's called the 3DS, where it's a 3D without glasses, if you remember.
Yep.
But that's only because the 3DS had a really, really terrible launch, and even Nintendo would tell you that, because they didn't have any amazing launch titles. That said, their Christmas was stellar, because they launched the Mario Kart game, they launched the Mario Land, and they just had a really strong, I think Mario Land is already over 5 million units sold, which is phenomenal for such a new game.
Now, what about, kind of stepping up in class to the console games? Is there any news? They've been pretty stagnant for the last while.
Oh, it's just we're all waiting for this fall for the new Nintendo Wii U.
Wii U.
Wii U. It's going to have
Wii YOU or Wii letter U?
Letter U, yeah. And it's going to have asynchronous play in it, actually.
Okay.
It's got a little tablet as one of the controllers, and it only comes with one of these tablets. Mm-hmm. And I get to see things on this tablet that you don't get to see because you're looking at the screen. And so maybe we're playing a baseball game, and I can pitch, and you can't tell where I'm pitching to because I'm touching the little touchpad. So there's a lot of interesting aspects. And they showed a demo at E3 last year where you're chasing somebody around a maze, and you can't see where he is, but I can see because I'm looking at the tablet. I can see where I am.
How big is the tablet?
I can't remember the stats, but I think it was around a 7-inch. So it wasn't crazy big, but it wasn't too tiny.
Now, I wonder if there will be somebody will create an app that will run, replacing the tab, making your iPad your tablet or your iPhone or your Android device the tablet in that sort of a place. I could see that being pretty compelling.
Yeah, I know that it will have remote play, which is also what the PS Vita has, where you can actually have, maybe you're playing a PlayStation 3 game and your mom wants to watch TV, so they want to change the channel. You leave the PlayStation 3 on. There's some games where you can do remote play, where I can turn on my PlayStation Vita and continue playing that PlayStation 3 game on my Vita.
The Wii had that, too. The Wii had some of that crossover play.
The Wii U will have that.
Oh, Wii U. Oh, that's right, because PlayStation had it with their PlayStation Portable or whatever their most portable one. Absolutely.
And the biggest thing for the Vita that they're trying to launch is the fact that they have cross-play. And this will be the first time ever that you can play in some games, and they're hoping games like Call of Duty will have this, where I can play on my PlayStation 3 against a person who's on their PlayStation Vita.
Oh, or a PC.
That's crazier. That's crazy talk.
Come on. Well, by the way, once again, you're turning 40. Don't say when your mom wants to watch TV,
I don't live with my mom. I want to clarify that.
I know. I know. You're a grown-up man. I don't mind hanging out with you, but when you say things like that, you just leave yourself open, my friend.
I was just assuming your demographic of your listeners of your show were just really young and hip people.
No, they aren't. Okay. Last question is about the actual handheld gaming market as far as the iOS devices. The Apple made a fairly interesting claim at the rollout of the new iPad, saying that they are the most popular gaming platform now for handheld. Do you buy that?
It's pretty damn near close. I mean, with those millions and hundreds and billions of apps being downloaded, I don't have any stats to back it up, but I would believe it. Yeah.
Now, other than the drawing games, what do you have an iPad? Are you playing?
Yeah.
On the iPad?
Oh yeah.
What course, do you play? So what does the game guy play on the iPad?
I'm big on these asynchronous games. I play them daily, all those ones we just talked about, because it's a great way to connect with friends, and it's easy to play, and those are great. Other than that, I play, you know, some like little role-playing games or little action-y games. But
now, are they any good?
Well, yeah. I mean, because as long as the game takes advantage of the touch interface, and that's what I like. Mm-hmm. You know, so it really is made for that platform.
I feel so, you know what I play? I'm going to admit right now, I play two games. I play Bejeweled Blitz.
Sure, yeah,
which
yeah.
It's a Facebook game blowing up. But for me, it's almost meditation. It just allows my mind to disengage. So I enjoy that game. And I play chess. I find the iPad the ideal chess companion because it doesn't talk to me. I can cheat. And it's just the right size.
You might like a game called Dungeon Raid, which is very Bejeweled-esque, in which you're trying to just draw little connected things that match. But it's got a little bit of like a build up your character as you're doing it.
Okay. Good. I will let you go in a half a second, but I didn't prep you on this, but I was reading online as I was going through some of the different stories that apparently Diablo 3 or 4, the new Diablo is going to be 3 is going to be coming out soon. Now, back in the day when my son was young, I did learn and play Diablo with him, and so I'd played through all of those games. Am I as a mature gentleman going to want to play the new Diablo?
I hope so, because I'm also mature sometimes.
And, but it's taken forever for them to get it out.
I know, but hey, Blizzard is very much like Pixar. They are 100% hit rate, and not just in critical, but also in like box office, whatever you call that in the video game world. Every game they've ever made has been a smash success. StarCraft, Warcraft, World of Warcraft, and Diablo. And so, hey, if it takes them another 2 years, then that's fine. But they've given us a release date. It's May 15th. It's coming out.
That's soon.
Yeah.
Like next month.
Yeah.
Well, nearly next month. Next month in a bit.
Yeah.
May 15th. And
yeah,
is it going to be PC only?
No, it'll be Mac and PC.
It'll be Mac and PC. Oh, well, yeah. I might play it.
I know. I can't wait. It's going to be fantastic.
Can you hook me up?
Yeah, we'll talk after.
Jay Cormier is my game guy. He spends his day working hard like a dedicated slave at Best Buy, but the rest of the time he spends
playing games
and doing other things and turning 40 tomorrow. You enjoy your birthday and you have a great time with your friends and family, Jay.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
That's Jay Cormier. Joining me online now, Theo Horstall from London Drugs. How are you doing, Theo?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing good. Now, you sent me a note that you want to talk about this Neat scanner today, NEAT. And this is a company that's surprising me because they seem to be really gaining some traction in the marketplace. And it's just a scanner. What's so special about it?
I would say that the differentiator between this and other scanners is really the software that you get with the scanner itself. As you mentioned, there's lots of different scanners out there. And scanners do one thing. They take your analog information and turn it into digital so you can keep it on your computer. The difference between this and another scanner is that it will actually organize for you based on what you put into it.
Now, there's been a couple of companies that have tried to do this in the past, but the software was always fairly cumbersome, and the integration with the scanner was hit or miss. These guys have got a nice, reliable solution because they've got two different models of scanner. They've got a desktop, and they have a portable scanner. Now, you use one?
Yeah, I do. I actually use the desktop version, and between the two of them, it has identical software. And I think, as you mentioned, a lot of other scanner companies rely on other people to make the scanner software work with their scanner. Neat has done it all themselves. So they've done software, they've done the scanner as a solution, and it comes to you as a complete solution. And the desktop version, as you mentioned, that I have, it's designed for heavier workflow with lots of documents and lots of receipts and lots of cards and things like that.
And really, where it comes down to is not so much the document scanning. I don't think. I don't know if you use it for a lot of document scanning, but I would think that people use this for scanning and receipts and business cards.
Absolutely. And the nice thing about this is, for example, if I'm in a meeting and I take somebody's business card, the last thing I want to do is I want to keep I want to keep that around. So what I do is the first thing is I scan it into my Neat Receipts desktop scanner, scans it in, it recognizes everything, all the pertinent information, like the company that they work for, their phone number, their email address. And it literally allows me then to throw that card away and recycle it. And it updates my contact information instantly, just within about 5 seconds.
Now, are you using this in Mac or Windows?
I'm actually using it in Windows, okay. But it is a seamless experience for both Mac or Windows. You do need different versions of the software for each.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned before, one of the powers of this is really actually for regular receipts. So it will actually recognize what you've bought, how much you bought it for, and allow you to essentially output that into any number of accounting programs and allow you to coordinate it by what it is, whether it's a restaurant receipt, whether it's a business receipt. It's quite a powerful piece of software.
So it takes that optical character recognition, which is, we've seen for a long time, scanning in business cards, pulling out the business name, the address and stuff. It takes that metaphor to the next level and actually does it for expenses. So it says, this is food, this is travel, and it'll help you categorize that?
Exactly. And also, that's the power for the receipts. For documents you mentioned before, one of the things it will do is it actually will scan it, optical character recognition, then it will be searchable. So if you have a name of a business or a name of a company or whatever information, if it's printed on the document, it's now a searchable PDF that you can use within your digital workflow and be able to get rid of that piece of paper.
And I'm looking on their site, and they've got a couple of different bundles available. They've got the small scanner bundled with a receipt software. They have the Neat Desk, which is, I guess, the scanner, and their full receipt and their software that does a little bit of everything. And they also have their software as a standalone available, depending on what scanner you have.
You could add it to an existing scanner. We'd recommend, picking up the full solution.
Yeah.
The difference between the portable and the desktop, other than being a portable and desktop, is the desktop allows you to put in a receipt, a business card, and a document all at the same time, and it will scan them all simultaneously, whereas the portable version, you actually have to feed in a document type at a time. So if you had, 20 receipts, you'd have to feed in the 20 receipts, and then your business cards, and then your documents. And the desktop actually has individual slots that you could just put all your paper in at once, and it'll, in one pass, it'll scan everything.
A document feeder. And it doesn't look like it's an inexpensive product, though.
Well, as they say, you get what you pay for sometimes. The desktop is $499, so it's really, I would say, more designed for a small business or somebody with a lot of scanning to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the portable version is a little bit more affordable at $229. And that's not very much different than other business-grade scanners out there.
Yeah, and certainly a portable scanner, it makes a lot of sense as well. And I know I was reading they have some integration into some of the Web 2.0 solutions like Evernote and stuff. So it's got some, they certainly seem to have hit a sweet spot. It's called the Neat Scanner, available under X. And do you have anyone set up on demo there people are going to be able to see, or are they...
That it would be vary by store, but one of the other things that is called is they call the portable version Neat Receipts, and they call the desktop version Neat Desk.
Neat Desk. Neat as in NEAT.
Correct.
And hopefully they do keep your desk neat. Teo Hurstel is a product manager for a buyer for Lennon Drugs, their technology department. Thanks so much. Joining me now, Rick Yeager, our Mac expert. How are you doing, Rick?
I'm good. How's it going?
It's good to hear it. What wonderful things do you have for me today?
I'm trying to get a bit organized.
Okay.
I know. Nobody likes to hear about, someone whipping them into shape and getting organized, but it's got to happen sometime.
And you find some gems. And the thing about most of these organizational tools that you're going to talk about, I'll give this one caveat right away. If you buy them, you got to use them.
Yeah.
A lot of people buy them, dabble, and then don't commit to the process.
Well, like they say about diets, the best diet is the one that you stick to.
Exactly.
It doesn't really matter what it is. It's the one that you stick to.
Okay. So what productivity apps are you going to talk to me about?
The one I use is Things. And that's my to-do app.
Okay.
And it's recently become a cloud-based application where you can... put in a to-do on your Mac, and it shows up on Things for your iPhone and Things for your iPad.
Which, so this would compete with OmniFocus, I guess, is the other kind of big player in this space right now.
Well, actually, the biggest player at this point is Reminders, which comes on the iOS already and is going to be on Mountain Lion.
Okay.
And the reason why I'm still like all in the Things for Mac is $49.99. Things for iPhone $9.99. Things for iPad. Why can't you just make the application a universal app? Is $19.99.
So it's $80. Yeah.
$80 all in, but it's still more flexible than Reminders. It offers better organization, especially for repeating tasks. And for me, the example I like to bring up is my haircuts, because I get my haircut every 3 weeks. But it reminds me on Friday, but I don't actually get the appointment until next Friday. So that means that I'm going to get reminded 2 weeks after my last haircut, which isn't right. So what Things does is it allows you to repeat a task every 3 weeks or 3 weeks after completion.
Oh, okay. So it's got a little bit more and or logic in setting up your reminders. So this is a super to-do list manager.
This is very much geared toward the getting things done crowd.
Yes.
It was put together with that in mind all the way. So okay. If you're part of that cult, and many of us are.
Now, a lot of people do this just in iCal or in their calendar app.
Some people just do it in notes.
Yeah.
Well, and like we said at the top of the segment, do what works for you. I know a friend of mine, Callie Lewis, who's got a great podcast out there. She still does all of her to-dos on Post-its, like real physical Post-its.
Wow. So
whatever works for you is what it comes down to.
Now, the one thing I noticed is this does sync into iCal. Does it sync both ways? When you create a calendar event in iCal, can you turn that automatically into a to-do?
I have not had that work.
Oh.
I know.
See, that's a deal killer for me. It's got to be, you've got to make it, for one of these things to work properly, they've got to have the same functionality as, dare I say, Outlook.
Mm.
Which is, you go into the calendar, you can make an appointment that you can create a reminder. You're in an email, you can create a reminder in the email that becomes a calendar event and becomes a to-do. That's the integration we need. And you're telling me we don't have it yet, Rick?
Yeah, we don't have. Well, it goes one way where things can monitor one calendar in iCal and add it to Things, uh-huh. But it doesn't go the other way around.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna play with it. Now, do they have a demo at least that you can play with?
Well, since it's culturecode.com is where you get it. I think you can still download it.
Okay.
In this age of the App Store where nothing has a download trial download, trials are going to become less
and
less.
Are they becoming less and less? Really? Because they have light versions, I guess, now in the iTunes Store. But
true enough. Yeah, that might be where it goes.
See, a trial version of the software would be nice, but it's one that keeps you on track. Things.
It keeps me on track. I don't use iCal as much as you do, so that's probably why it hasn't become a problem for me.
I don't love iCal. I'm not happy with it. I'm not happy with the calendaring, and I'm not happy with the address book. That's the only thing that, you know, using my Mac and living on the Mac, and I hate saying it because it's not the most elegant application, but Outlook I miss.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What's next?
Next is Text Expander.
Text Expander.
Okay. This one's a hard one to explain even. It's a text shortcut app. Maybe it's best explained if I kind of present the problem. And if the problem is if you ever have to type the same text over and over again, like mm-hmm. the same email reply, a canned response,
mm-hmm.
where only the name changes, or if you have to type out your mailing address a lot, just want to quickly fire off a mailing address. If you have several ways of signing an email depending on the subject matter, I know some people have some pretty racy things in their email signature, and maybe they don't want to send that one to their boss, their members of the clergy. And this will allow you to program Text Expander to remember that big chunk of text and attach it to a trigger. And that trigger would be something that you wouldn't otherwise type. So one of the ones that comes with it is the date, just to be able to type the current date. You type D-D-A-T-E. Now, you'd never type two D's in the word date, so that's not going to be a problem. But as soon as you hit the space bar after the E, text expander goes bloop and spits out the current date.
Okay. This is a nice tool. Now, does it works in every all of your text apps in your email? Does it work in Pages?
It works
system-wide?
Yeah, system-wide.
So if you're in a website, if you're in a web response form, it'll still do that.
Yes, and if you're a blogger, I don't know if any of your listeners are bloggers, you can download a free kind of expansion pack for it that will give you HTML tags. So you can type a quick trigger, and it'll do the open tag and the end tag and put the cursor right between them.
Okay, that's nice for if you're doing raw HTML coding.
Exactly.
Here's where this product really makes sense. If you are in business and marketing or in tech support at all, where you do have on regular responses that you have to send out on an ongoing basis.
For sure.
Now, I write for magazine. In some of the magazines that I write for, I have to source my own photography for. So right. I've got a stock form that I've written, which is, dear so-and-so, here's the, or, you know, I just have blank. I'm writing an article for, I put in the name of the magazine, and I'm interested in your, and then I have a blank for the product. I'm looking for high-res photos, and then I give them all the specs of the photos and request either a download site or for them to be sent to a special email address because I don't want it plugging everything up.
Right.
So that's what I do. And so I've got these, so it's just like a snippet that I do. Now, I just keep that as a template in email, but it's a pain in the butt. I would much rather have it just a quick series of keystrokes.
So you could set that up as a keystroke, and then for each one of those blanks, it would prompt you, okay, what's the name of the magazine?
Yeah.
Type it in.
Oh, yeah, I would have that. I'd just be looking for the person's name that I found online and the product that I'm looking for. Yeah, that's ideal. And then you could have this, and then I use a custom signature is how I actually do the whole thing in email. So my entire email is a signature.
A signature, yeah.
but I like this idea. And it's, how much is this product? It is.
This is $34.99.
Not cheap, but it's a good productivity tool. If you do a lot of repeating stuff, this is good.
And once you get into it, you find other things that it can do. It can do those short URLs.
Oh, it'll automatically shorten the URLs for you?
Yeah, you just copy that huge, long Amazon URL and then type slash bit.ly and then bloop, it does the bit.ly link.
It does the bit.ly link. So that's great if you're in Twitter, it does it automatically for you and stuff.
But it does.
But if you're a blogger, it's a great idea.
Very good.
Yeah, okay. That's a good one. That's a winner. So far, it's leading the day.
Okay. My next one is Sketch.
Sketch. Love Sketch.
Recently bought by the good fellows at Evernote.
Yes.
It's the most commonly asked question on Twitter. I troll Twitter for Mac questions just to be Mr. Helpful. And the most commonly asked question out there is, how do I take a screenshot on my Mac? It's simple. Command-Shift-3. Okay? If that's all you ever wanted to know, there you go. But Sketch lets you do a little bit more than that. It gives you a new key command for taking screenshots and allows you to annotate them.
Mm-hmm. And does it allow you to save them in different formats?
Save them in different formats.
That's
upload
key.
Them.
That's
upload
key.
Them to different services. And depending on the service you upload it to, it will even put the link to that service where it is in your clipboard so that you can just quickly paste it in like a tweet or an email off to somebody.
Now, you know, I have Sketch on my iPhone and on my iPad, but I did not have it on my Mac. And guess what I'm downloading right now as we speak?
It is so handy for just showing people what you see on your screen right now, especially if, in your case, you're the one doing the tech support. You want the person on the other end to have Sketch to take a shot of their screen. What are you talking about? It's so hard to do tech support just verbally. If you could get a visual representation, what exactly are you talking about? Which mm-hmm. button are you clicking?
Oh yeah, and if you're sending people a map to your house, you just take a screenshot of Google Maps, and then you draw a big arrow to where your house is, and then you type in the text, be sure to turn left on 8A Street. You've got all that ability. It's great. It's Sketch is a terrific tool. That's a must have. Absolutely.
Especially since it's free.
Yeah, free. And that's I love the
Free's
Evernote
a good
guys.
Price.
The Evernote guys, they get it.
Yeah.
Folks, the Evernote folks. I shouldn't say guys. Okay.
So, well, everything else is like $30 or $40 sketch free.
Okay. Well, you're on a roll. Do you want to do the last one? Or because you know, you've done two real good ones in a row.
I'm going to go for it. Okay. I'm going to go for Default Folder X.
Okay.
Even though it's got the X at the end, which kind of dates it.
It dates it. And, you know, their website looks so DOS. Okay.
Yeah, it does.
Okay, so what does Default Folder X do for me?
For $34.95.
Mm-hmm.
The problem it solves is, well, I often find myself confused by my own file system.
I'm not confused by my file system. I'm confused by Apple's file system occasionally.
Oh, okay. Well, no, I just find that I'll be working on a project, and yes, I've been bright enough to save everything in the same folder, but sometimes I forget that exactly which folder that folder is in.
Okay.
And I've lost myself, and I don't know how to navigate to that folder from the save dialog box.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to save something back to it, and
yeah, the save dialog box is a little limiting at times.
Yeah, so default folder comes to the rescue in a few ways. It keeps a history of the last few folders I've saved to.
Okay.
Which usually solves the problem right there.
Which Apple should do in the operating system.
Yes. It also allows me to save folders to a favorites menu, which Apple has done in the past, and it comes in and out of favor.
Mm-hmm.
No pun intended. And the other thing, it allows me to point to an open window on my desktop through all the layers of clutter that is covering it. If you can imagine this.
Yes.
That if you imagine all of the applications that are open on my desktop, and somewhere behind all of that is the folder I want to save to, open right there, I can point my cursor to it, and it does this little gray, dark gray overlay. And I can say, yes, that one, save it there.
Isn't that cute? Now, that is cute. That's cute. $35, though.
$35. It also...
People don't think I'm cheap by how much I complain about these things.
No, it's the time... The time of the $35 app, I sure hope, is coming to a close. But it also allows me to, well, it kind of caters to my my problem of being easily distracted because it allows me to move, rename, and delete files from the open and save dialog box.
Okay.
So if I've been kind of disorganized, I haven't, you know, created
That's
an
good.
Images folder for this project, I should probably do that. I can do that now. I can do that as I'm saving the image. I don't have to save it, then go back to Finder, find it again, put it in the image folder.
Yeah.
I can do it all from the save dialog box. Again, something that Apple should allow us to do.
They do for the most part. You can create new folders.
You can create new folders, but you can't move things around.
You can't move the folder, and you can't say, I should grab this other document and drag it into this folder.
Exactly.
That is frustrating,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Rick Yeager, excellent, excellent stuff today.
Especially did I do good?
Text expander and Sketch. Golden default folder, really interesting things. I don't know. I'll give it a look. I'm not sure I'm there. Rick Yeager, you can find all of his blog posts, his videos, his appearances, his regular TV appearances at appman.tv. Well, that pretty much puts a bow on this week's show. My thanks to my guests, Theo Horstall, Jay Cormier, Rick Yeager, and Catherine Demopoulos. Next week on the show, I think we're going to be talking about the Slingbox, the newest Slingbox. I've got one that should be arriving this week, and I should be installing it because I don't actually have one installed right now. So I'm going to be going through the installation process, and then we'll be talking about how Slingbox has changed and how it's evolved over the last little while. Next week on Dottotech. As well, a reminder to visit our website. There you can, of course, listen to this or previous podcasts. You can find all the links to all of the content that we covered on the show and also links to any contests that we have going. We got a neat new one to announce for you next week as well. I'm Steve Dotto, and thank you so much for tuning in this week to Dottotech.